Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby. Mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa. Take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Ch-ch-chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah. Oh. Sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes.
Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Old Lady Speaks podcast on Black and White and Red All Over. This is your host, Danny, coming to you for episode number three. And I hate to do it to him, but based on the transfer fee, the Federico Bernardeschi episode. He's got Spike and Wendy at home. I think we can safely say that it's been a little bit of a disappointment for the first Fetty from Fiorentina to sign with Juventus the last couple of years. It's been a struggle, so... Speaking of struggles, Juventus, we're going to be in a much different mood than last week. And that is because Juventus' game against Inter in the Derby d'Italia went not so great. So first, before I start ranting and raving about Juventus' last game, let me bring in the usual crew here as we wait for Chucks to get unfrozen. We've got Sam Lopresti. Hello, Sam.
And this is the second week in a row that I'm a little disappointed about the number. I was hoping for Evra, mainly because I just wanted to talk about those videos that he would make with the panda suit.
Yes.
Like those were fun.
Those were very good.
And he gave Mario Mandzukic his name.
Yes. Yes. And unfortunately, now we get to see Mario Mandzukic as an AC Milan player. So
I have the sad.
And we've got Sergio Romero. Hello, Sergio.
Hey, fellas, happy to be here as always. Less happy to be here in the current circumstances, but, you know, nevertheless, always good to say hi to you, fellas.
I was about to say, you can't be all that happy knowing what happened yesterday.
Circumstances are not great, but, you know, always happy to do a pod with you guys.
And we've got Chucks. Hello, Chucks.
Hello, pardon the technical problems. yeah, my Zoom just crashed, but I'm back. Unlike Juventus, because we went... backwards, I guess.
Well, forwards and then backwards and so on and so forth and rinse and repeat as we've done many a times this season. So I usually take notes on what we're going to talk about before we get going here on the podcast. And honestly, the first note that I have here, and I'm going to have to edit myself, but in terms of yesterday's game, what the f***, man? I mean, we're looking for Juventus to make a statement or continue to on this trend of successful January results, and they just laid an absolute leg against Inter. And Chucks, you were kind of hesitant after the Milan win to be like, hold on, let's not get too carried away with this one. And lo and behold, Chucks was right.
I don't enjoy being right. I mean, in this case, obviously. I mean, obviously, I don't. In case anybody was wondering, I don't enjoy being right in this situation. Yeah, I mean, it was pretty grim. So, as I said before, we started recording. I didn't actually watch the game. I had a family event to attend. Contrary to popular belief, I do have a life. But I read a match recap and just obviously caught some of the general sentiments behind the game. And yeah, I mean, it sounded like some pretty grim watching, really. And, you know, it's funny. With regards to your comment about my comment after the Milan game, I try to avoid something called outcome bias, which is basically where you judge how good a result is, or how good a decision is, rather, or just in general a result based on just the result. So in the case of the Milan game, you know, we would think, oh, okay, we won 3-1 that game. Everything is fantastic. Everything is dandy.
Everything was fantastic. Everything was, it was dandy.
Sort of ish for a while. Sort of ish temporarily, kind of.
For a couple hours.
Yeah, and then crashing down to earth. So, you know, I try to avoid that. And I mean, my qualms after that game were just that I thought we were not in control for large parts of the game, despite the fact that Milan had essentially no midfield and just, you know, I mean, half their team missing. And then I was even more annoyed after the Sassuolo game. That really was like, obviously we're going to talk mostly about Inter game, but just a quick reference to the Sassuolo game. The thing that annoyed me about that game was that, you know, obviously they were with 10 men, and even with 10 men, they outpassed us for like a good, I mean, you know, 20, 30 minutes. I was like, I mean, it's one thing to outpass, which obviously is testament to the fact that Sassuolo is a fantastic team. And, you know, I think De Zerbi, I think was his name, deserves, I mean, absolute credit for just a fantastic team, you know. But, I mean, that cannot happen. I mean, you cannot, against 10 men, if you're being outpassed against 10 men, there's something really, really wrong and really right with the other team. So anyway, that's with the Sassuolo game very quickly. But yeah, with the Inter game, actually, there are commonalities. Actually, now that I look at it, that's a good segue into the Inter game, because obviously the big topic we will seemingly perpetually talk about is the midfield. You know, I mean, it's
that thing that just hangs over Juventus like no other.
It is strange. I mean, it's, you know, I was thinking about that today, late yesterday and then today for a bit. I was thinking like, wow, I think I just took it for granted how once upon a time we had arguably the best midfield in Europe, you know, with, you know, Marchisio, the MVP midfield of, you know, Marchisio, Vidal, Pirlo and Pogba. And I think I just took it as like, oh yeah, of course, you know, we have the best midfield, you know, so what, you know. And then now I realize like, oh, wow, that was really, really special, actually. Like, I just took it for granted. And, you know, hereby I apologize to whoever. I mean, I don't know, to whoever, somewhere. But, and honestly, I think a lot of us took it for granted because it just seemed normal at the time to have that extraordinary quality in midfield. And now that we don't have it, it just, you realize how important that was. A, how important that midfield was, but then B, just, and I knew this already, but it's just resonating now, really, how important a midfield period is to a team. It really is. I mean, you know, some would argue that the best teams are built on defense, which, I mean, largely I agree with. But I think you could even argue that maybe more important than a solid defense is a truly, truly, truly world-class midfield. And frankly, I mean, we're seeing the effects of that issue for the last, I mean, two seasons, really, including this one. So, you know, this season now and then last season. And you could argue part of the season before that, but I'll argue mostly with Sarri. Rambling on a little bit here, but one last thing I'll say is that I think that really the main kind of paradox with our midfield is, personally, I think in terms of quality, we have a really, really good midfield. I mean, man for man, I think, you know, talent-wise, it's really good. but for some reason they're just all out of form, except for McKennie, really, who, you know, had that slight injury niggle and, you know, just wasn't 100% fit, I guess. But they're just none of them are in form, and it's just the strangest thing. And they're either out of form or just seemingly not realizing their potential, like Bentancur, which is also just a conundrum. But like I said, I'm rambling on a little bit, but I'll obviously let others take the floor now.
I'm going to disagree with you, Chucks, in one respect, in that I think that the problem goes back longer than you say it does. Frankly, I think it goes all the way back to when Arturo Vidal got sold to Bayern, which is really ironic given the fact that he scored one of the textbook goals that he would have scored, that he scored for Conte to open the scoring yesterday.
It was just so fitting that he scored. I mean, it was the X effect to the nth degree.
Yeah, and props to him for not celebrating. At least there's class there. But the thing is that Vidal was never adequately replaced to begin with. And ever since that moment, you know, the midfield has just been on a slow backslide. And it was covered up by results for a while, going to the two, you know, obviously the unit was still together that the first time we went to the final. The second time we went to the final, it was covered up really by brilliance that 4-2-3-1 was that one year. But it's really just, it's been a slow, slow decline that has only really been thrown into stark relief now that Juventus is starting to try to play a more, quote, modern, unquote, more aesthetically pleasing offensive style of football when you have, you know, when you don't necessarily have the right mix of midfielders to do it with. You know, I do agree with you. I think that man for man, everybody in that midfield is very, very talented. I've said this before. What we don't have is that guy who can make those passes, a kind of like Manuel Locatelli kind of a guy is my main thing. I've said his name ad nauseum, and if Fabio Paratici doesn't back up a Brinks truck to Sassuolo over the summer to get him, I'm going to be upset. But somebody on a Facebook group that I'm on said this, and I think it's true because I think it goes to why this hasn't been fixed yet, which is this is what starts happening when you act like a brand and not a football club. When you start shoveling ungodly amounts of money at one dude for the exposure, it's boggling how, you know, we keep on getting decent players. Aaron Ramsey accepted. Aaron Ramsey can go far, far away. I don't ever want to see him starting a big game again, you know, but the club just has not had the ability or willingness. Either they haven't had the ability to make moves that will really fix this midfield, or they have just not recognized the need for it. And here we are getting not just beat, but run off the field by an Inter team that is coached by Antonio Conte, put together by Beppe Marotta, which is probably an even bigger thing, and was led by Arturo Vidal. And by the way, Nicola Barella, there's another one. Letting Nicola Barella get out to Inter instead of going hard in on him when he was still at Cagliari, which we were linked to him pretty hard until he went to Inter. I'm just, it really does, I think, show the real deficiencies in the office, and I'm really not with Fabio Paratici. Fabio Paratici is not on my good side right now. And I know that that's a complete and utter tragedy for him. You know, the guy on the internet doesn't like him. This game, I think, more than anything, more than what happened on the field from the players, more than what Pirlo's decisions, although there were some suspect decisions that Pirlo made, especially in game. This game was on the front office more than anybody else.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough because, you know, losing away to Inter, you never want that just in general in a vacuum. But it really shouldn't be the death knell of a season. It really shouldn't, especially when we're not even halfway into the season, you know, by number of games played. But it definitely feels like it. And it feels like it just because, as we mentioned before, they just lost any sort of wiggle room to have this type of results. And with Milan winning earlier today, that it really does feel, it really did feel like kind of like the end of, I don't want to say an era, but it really did feel like the Scudetto chances, the, you know, the 10th straight chances are now significantly lower. And obviously, like Sam said, it sucks that it had to come against Inter and Antonio Conte and all of that, with Arturo Vidal scoring the go-ahead goal and what would ultimately end up being the game deciding goal, really. So that obviously sucks. But what really bothered me the most, and it wasn't even, this was the first time that I truly saw Andrea Pirlo like, oh, he's a rookie coach. Like, he legitimately, he got outcoached, he got outclassed by a guy who obviously has a ton more experience than he did. But it was bad. It was bad because in a vacuum, I don't hate his approach of, you know, a high defensive line, a lot of possession, a lot of that. But to try and do that with Leonardo Bonucci and Giorgio Chiellini as your two center backs is suicidal. And this is not that those two guys cannot be good, but putting them in that high press line is suicidal. I mean, you just can't do that. They're not, that's not their game anymore. They're old veteran dudes. Like, they cannot be tracking back to stop counterattacks all the time. Like, that's not going to work. And
plus, like, when have they ever, when have they ever even played in a high line, right? Like Bonucci and Chiellini.
Yeah, I mean, even at their best, that was not their game. And you're trying to put them in this situation. It's like, it feels a lot like a Maurizio Sarri, you know, redux, like a deja vu. Like, look, I know this is how you want to play, but at some point you do have to adapt and say, this is not working. And this is when we come back to that midfield, right? Like, I made the analogy and on the latest grab bag, like, these are not bad players, but you just don't have an ace, right? To borrow a term from baseball, you don't have an ace. You don't have that one dude who's going to be able to orchestrate that midfield and who's going to be able to put order in that midfield. Because I do believe that the Rabiot signing, Bentancur, I think they're good players. And I think that when put in a position to succeed, they can be part of a successful midfield for Juventus. They're not bad players. But if you don't have that one guy who can really bring them to another level, they're just not good enough on their own to kind of like sustain that midfield and to sustain that mode of play. And we've seen it time and time again. They're not at that point. Bentancur is a bit younger, but I just don't think they're the type of players that are going to be able to hold the ball and distribute and do what you need out of a midfielder that plays that high line and that plays that possession style of play. So it is part of on the front office, but it's also, I think, just the fact that since Allegri left, and even in the last few years of the Allegri era, there's just not an identity. And when they do have an identity, they just don't have the guys to play that identity. It's just, it was tough. It was tough. And, you know, it sucks to say, but I think that might have been the leak, because AC Milan, they're playing great. Like, they're good. They're not going to drop 10 points any moment. And Juventus, I don't think they're going to win, you know, four straight any moment either. So it's hard to say, but I think that's probably it, right?
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Yeah, that was going to be my next thing, is like, obviously, we hope Juventus finds consistency. I mean, we've been saying it on the podcast for months. This is the thing that will allow them to get back into the race after dropping so many points early. But we're one game away from the official midway point in the season. And the same stuff that was happening in September is happening now, the middle of January. So unless it clicks all of a sudden and the Super Copa or whatever, this is kind of who they are at this point. So are we saying goodbye to the Scudetto for the first time in a decade, basically?
I mean, logically, you have to assume it is very unlikely at this point. As a fan, you're going to keep on hoping for the miracle and keep on saying that weirder things have happened in football and in sports, and they have.
And especially in a season like this, where it's just so...
Yeah, that's the other thing.
You can just throw logic out the door. But at the same time, Milan is the most consistent team in the league. And I mean, outside of Zlatan being Zlatan, I don't know how many people really predicted Milan to be not only this consistent, but this able to sustain what they've done in the first few months, knowing that they've been without Zlatan for so many weeks, and now Ibra's back and scoring multiple goals to help them win again.
Yeah, that's true. And it also is indicative, I think, of the fact, you know, when I was watching on the ESPN feed, Mark Donaldson and Matteo Bonetti said this as well. This season is also indicative of the fact that the rest of Italy kind of really has caught up, and a major factor that we haven't seen before. So, I mean, am I glad that we're going to have to fight for stuff again? Yeah, actually, because, you know, in the long run, that'll probably help us in other competitions. But yeah, I mean, this is going to be, you know, it's going to be weird next year looking at the uniforms and looking at the jerseys and seeing a little something that we're really used to being there that probably won't be there again. But yeah, from logically, unless something really weird happens, something really clicks in and everybody else just face plants, it's we're probably done.
To be fair, I think I'm on record as saying that I did not expect us to win the Scudetto anyway this season. So.
You are.
So give me the money.
Chuck was right.
Again. Of course I'm right. Oh, I'm always right. Wise guy's always right. But no, I mean, obviously I gain no joy or satisfaction in potentially being right with that, because, you know, still anything is possible. I think I really like what Sam said about this is what happens when you, I'm going to mess up your quote a little bit. This is what happens when you act more like a brand rather than a football club. I thought that, I mean, that's spot on. I think that's because, you know, it makes me think of the fact that I think a real like crucial turning/breaking point in just kind of where we are now was, yeah, I mean, indeed, when we chose to act more like a brand by buying Ronaldo rather than a football club, in the sense that to fix what we needed to fix, which was the midfield at the time. That, I mean, looking back on that now, and obviously that's going to trigger a lot of discussion on in the comment section, which, you know, I mean, let us have it.
I will drink the tears of the stands.
Thanks, Chucks.
Ready, set, go. give us some moderating duties to do. But yeah, I mean, that was clearly, which, you know, we're preaching to the choir, obviously, but I think just looking at it now from that perspective of, you know, once we decided to act more like, yeah, boosting a brand rather than, frankly, treating the football club as a club, which in that sense would have been to, fix the midfield, which we sort of ish now kind of not really done. But I think, yeah, you know, I think we're at a, just going back to like this season right now, I think we're kind of at a pretty crucial fork in the road right now, in the sense that, yeah, Sergio, you said it, where Pirlo is still obviously persisting with the high line, the intense style of play. And yeah, I think we're at a point now where it's like, okay, are we going to decide to continue with that style of play and just say, okay, you know what, we're sort of accepting that we're not going to win much this season, so at least just try and instill your ideas into the team and like just stick with that and just stick with an identity? Or are we going to say, well, just go back to being pragmatic, like ditch your style of play, just be pragmatic? And I mean, it's a real question. I don't I don't know. I mean, I wonder what Bielo's going to do. I mean, I imagine he's probably going to stick to his style of play. That's just my guess. But I think that's just, you know, now that we're at this point where it does seem to be that we're going to be fighting more for top four than for the Scudetto, are we going to just persist with that, just that style of play, or go back to pragmatism? Because I think the argument for sticking with one style of play is I remember people said this last year as well, or people say it in general, where it's like, you know, okay, I don't care if we lose, but, well, of course we care if we lose, but I don't care if we lose, but at least stick with one style of play so that there's some clarity, and like at least give your style of play one full season of going 100% for it, rather than like half, kind of half-ass it, and like kind of try to do your style of play and be like, okay, no, for this match I'm gonna try this, you know, stick with one thing that, so at least there's some clarity. I mean, I see the argument in that, but frankly, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what's the best thing to do. I wish I knew, but I have no idea.
Yeah, going back to the question, is it done? I think it's done. I think it's done. I think they're not going to win the league this year. I think 10 points is just too much. Not even, you know, obviously because Juventus is not playing well, but because AC Milan, I think it's just a really good team. They're playing really well. They're being consistent. They have an identity. They know how to play. They actually bring back a lot of memories of that very first Juventus team that started this streak, right? Like, they were not the favorites player by player. They probably did not have the most talented team, but they knew how to play. They knew their style, and they were getting results. And I think this is what that Milan team is. I think they are a really good team. And I just don't see Juventus right now suddenly going on a streak and winning 12 straight, right? And hoping that Milan drops points. I think at this point, it's probably done. I think it's a done deal. But I do want to disagree with you guys a little bit on the sense that, you know, that this whole thing traces back to the Ronaldo signing and the brand thing. And look, I'm no fan of Ronaldo. I'm as far away from a stan as possible. But I don't think it really is that. And I do think that, Chucks, you said it yourself, I think we are falling a little bit in that, you know, the results-based bias pretty much, because it's not like they didn't bring in guys. They did bring in Rabiot. They did bring in Ramsey. They did bring in players. They did bring Arthur in. And at this time last season, we were saying, oh, Pjanic is done. He's cooked. Bentancur is better. We have to go with Bentancur. And they did make those moves, and they just didn't pan out. I don't think they really stopped trying. I just think, you know, they didn't pan out. Rabiot hasn't been, he's been good, but he hasn't been great. Bentancur hasn't really taken that extra step that we wanted him to take. You know, Arthur has been disappointing, I would say, but, and then Ramsey, I mean, he's been disappointing as well, but I don't think it's that they haven't tried. It's just that this time, for whatever reason, the bounces didn't go their way. And I think it's just going to be one of those things that I think they will have to keep, you know, taking swings until they actually land on someone who can actually kind of transform that whole midfield conundrum. It might be Locatelli, it might be Auer, as the comment section loves to point out all the time. We'll see, I guess, in the offseason. But I don't think it's due to a lack of trying. I think it's just more, they just were not, you know, the ball didn't bounce there, we'll say.
I wouldn't say that it was because of a lack of trying. I think that the way that their priorities have started aligning have caused them to start making the wrong moves, or have financially restricted the club into making moves that into settling for players that they might not otherwise have gone for. Or, you know, before Cristiano Ronaldo was on the club, was 40 million for Aouar from Lyon really that big of a deal? And I mean, yes, there's also the COVID part of this summer that also had a huge impact on that on whether or not that transfer was made. But like, would that have even been a question before we started paying him that as much money as the club is paying him? I just think that I think that, and you know, like I said, I think the current on-field struggles go far, far further back than that, with the decline in the midfield starting from Vidal on. But yeah, I think that it's a question of they're making the wrong choices as opposed to not trying.
I think, again, I don't agree they were the wrong choices at the moment. Even if you go back to how they kind of formed that, you know, the legendary midfield that we're all so familiar with, you look at how they assembled that midfield. That was, you know, they brought in Paul Pogba on a free. They brought in Arturo Vidal for not a lot of money. They brought in Andrea Pirlo when Milan actually gave him away because they didn't think he was all that at that point in his career. I'm not going to say that was just luck that they ended up panning out. I think that there was a lot of, you know, scouting and things like that. And they panned out and they were legendary midfield. I think that has always been their MO. I mean, I think in a vacuum at the time, signing Rabiot, that was exactly the type of signing they do. And he had the pedigree of a great player. He was young. He was exactly the type of move they had to make, and they made it. They banked a lot in the development of Rodrigo Bentancur, which we haven't seen really. They banked on Arthur somehow. You know, he was still a young guy. They banked on him, you know, kind of adapting more to Andrea Pirlo style. In a vacuum,
that was a balance sheet move. More than a field.
Yeah, that was a book cooking move too as well. I do agree. But I think at the time, I don't think they were bad moves. I think right now when we look at it, it's like, yeah, those guys can't cut it. They're not good enough. But I do think that it's easier to just blame and say they're bad moves when they didn't pan out. But I think the logic was sound. I think they were good moves at the time. Right now, obviously, where we stand, yeah, they do have to make moves. They do have to sell guys. They do have to do whatever they need to do to bring this midfield to a level where it needs to be. But I do believe that at the time, I don't think they were the wrong moves. I think the logic was there. And that's why I'm a little bit more, you know, I want to give them a little bit more leeway, I would say, a little bit more slack. Because, you know, sometimes, you know, things don't pan out. And then, you know, you just find out after the fact.
And this inner game, especially, and I mentioned it in my post-game thread, it really kind of magnified how much Inter has sculpted their midfield into kind of like an MVP light, where Juve's midfield, it just has so many guys who don't complement each other. You know, they're very much like for likes. I mean, Weston McKennie it seems like he's kind of the most kind of, I don't know if I'm trying to think of a word and I'm blanking out on it, but he's kind of the most Swiss Army like kind of midfielder because he's got so many different attributes. Whereas, you know, Arthur, he's able to keep the ball really well, but he doesn't pass it forward. You know, Rabiot and Bentancur, and albeit, you know, Rabiot has kind of cooled off from the summer run of form he's had, and obviously Bentancur has had a very disappointing season to date, but they're the same kind of player. Ramsey is what he is. I mean, he has a good game, it seems like once every month or so, and that's about it. But there's just not kind of the complement of Vidal and Barella and Brozovic and all that kind of stuff, where you see that they fit together. Whereas Juve's is just kind of the same kind of guys, and it's just like, here, try and make it work. So it's on the front office, sure, but it's also kind of on Pirlo a little bit to be like, okay, this is what I have. I need to, you know, I need to form my midfield to what I do have. And I think Bentancur is the biggest thing, because we thought he would take that next step, and he'd maybe not necessarily be a Pirlo like deep lying midfielder, but he had that in him a little bit. But because he's struggled so much, it seemed like so much was kind of centered around his success. And then, you know, Arthur is what he is at this point. And it's just, you know, Bentancur really struggling, I feel like, has prevented this midfield from really kind of making a big step of improvement. And, you know, we're here where we are again, and, you know, over the summer of going, what do we do with this midfield? And it's just, I don't know. It's an audio medium, I know, and I just keep throwing my hands up in the air because I don't know where to go at this point.
Sorry, I was still laughing at what Danny said.
Hey, it's one of those games where, I mean, we said, you know, after the Fiorentina game, it was going to be a therapy session, but this might be more of a therapy session because it's like, yeah, like Sergio was saying, it kind of feels like everything's done. And it's like, okay, no more Scudetto. Maybe we should just finish, you know, concentrate now on top four, but damn it, I want another title.
Don't we all, don't we all? No, I wanted to go off something you said and then something I mentioned very early in the episode, which is that, you know, man for man, talent-wise, we do objectively have a very good midfield. But the fact that they're not, and then, you know, that comment you made about contrasting Inter's midfield with ours, for instance, I think it's a very accurate one because, you know, okay, our talent is great, but then it's just not working. Like, something's just not working out. In contrast, you have Inter's midfield, which man for man might be a little less, not quite as good, or I don't know, equal. Not light years ahead of ours in essence, but it works. It fits. It's functioning. It's perfectly complementing each other, which to me says, as you said, that that is a coaching responsibility. You know, the responsibility of the coach is to maximize the resources that he has at his disposal. And in this sense, that means just, you know, setting, this is, I haven't quoted him in a while, but Tim Vickery,
as he's back, baby.
Drink.
He's drank, baby.
Ooh, they like that one. Back with a bang, guys.
It's been weeks.
Oh, it has. Yeah, you know, just when you thought I was out, you know, pull me back in.
Thank you, Mr. Corleone. Appreciate it.
That's actually becoming more quoted than Tim Vickery now. Funny. But, you know, as Vickery once said, you know, he said something along the lines of the responsibilities of the manager is to set the collective context such that the individual can shine. Like, the individual can only shine if the collective context is right. And yeah, I mean, in this sense with the midfield, talented individuals, but the collective context is not right. That's why it's just not working. Like, they're just not in form. The one exception, I think, is indeed Ramsey, because he's, I don't know, I feel like Ramsey's had the longest period of time to, I don't know, to show that he's worthy. And yeah, Ramsey's probably one guy I'm also running short of patience with. So, you know, sorry, Aaron. But yeah, so I mean, that's clearly kind of a problem, that if the collective context is not right, like, what, you know, why are things just not fitting? Why are things just not working out? But then on someone like Artur, he's probably the one Ramsey, I give the least patience with, but Artur, I probably have the most patience with, because, I mean, obviously he's been here at least period of time. And I don't know, I just feel like he just needs like five, six games of like 90 minutes, like back to back of just really, you know, because he's had a game and then he's had, you know, then he's on the bench, then he's plays 20 minutes, then he plays 90, then he kind of plays 20. And, you know, it's just that obviously he's had injury as well, but.
And he just needs the Barca hammered out.
yeah. Well, that's not just a style of play; that's a style of life. I think, you know, that's, which I sympathize. It's funny, actually, kind of off topic, but it reminds me of something that Alexis Sanchez once said when he went to Barca, and then after he left, he said, like, you know, going to Barca was like relearning football for me. So, you know, I guess that leaving Barca must be kind of the reverse as well. So I don't know. It's anyway, just going back to the midfield issue, it's just a consistent conundrum, and there's clearly something wrong with the tactical setup if it's just not working this way. I mean, you know, talent-wise, it has to work, but for some reason, it's just not, so I don't know.
I'm going to step up for Pirlo here, because it's entirely possible that what he's done has maximized this group in terms of how they go together and what they have. I mean, you know, a chef is only as good as his ingredients. If you're making sweet and sour pork, it's going to be better if you have decent pork products than if you're like trying to throw spam into your pan. And like, sometimes that's what it feels like with this group of midfielders. I think, missing McKennie was huge from the start, because I think he has qualities on the in the midfield that free up the other players to do other things. So not having him is was a big deal. And I also think that because of that lack of creativity in the midfield, not having Paulo Dybala was huge, because the creativity has to come from somewhere. And Dybala is really the only guy on the team that can do something like that without anybody that can do it in the midfield. But I digress. I'm going off on a tangent there, but I think that I don't necessarily think that coaching can solve this, because like Danny said, these guys are too similar to each other. There isn't a lot of complementary pieces in the midfield. And I don't know what tactical answers you can come up with to fix that.
Sorry, can I add something very quickly before I know we're about to go to Twitter questions, I think.
As you were.
I think it's going to respond to what Sam said. I think this reminds me of something that I wrote about in my book, which is that, you know, there are two choices that a manager can make. You can do a systems first approach or a players first approach. I mean, a pretty, you know, self-explanatory, but basically a players first system or players first approach is that you say, okay, I want the best individuals on the pitch at the same time, and then figure it out, guys, you know, just chug them all on at the same time, figure it out. You know, you just want the best on the pitch. Whereas, you know, systems first approach is like choose a system and then get the players that best fit that system. And I just wonder what Pirlo is prioritizing or what he wants to do. And B, going into the future, could a potential solution be, you know, maybe just, I don't know, going for a certain system that, I don't know, maximizes the resource available. I don't know, but it just made me think of that. Like, okay, is it a player's first approach or a system's first approach? I'm not entirely sure, but I think there is something in there of that choice to make as a coach, which might be some solution to the problem.
All right, time for some Twitter questions here. And I'm going to preface this by saying we got a lot of responses this week, which, thank you. I guess people were, you know, decent enough to put aside their grumpiness for a minute or two and send us something. It felt like about 95% of the Twitter questions were about the midfield. So obviously we just spent half an hour talking about the midfield. So,
you know, convenient.
How convenient. So anyway, shout out to everybody who sent us a question that involved Juventus's midfield. And basically it was, what do they need to do to fix the midfield? Our first Twitter question here from at Eugene High, which is a great Twitter handle. Let's assume Juventus won't win anything valuable this year, meaning the Scudetto or the Champions League. Should Andrea Pirlo be given some credit to continue his project, or should he leave? Sergio Romero, what say you?
I'm offended that this guy doesn't consider the Supercoppa like a huge deal, but whatever.
Coppa Italia.
Touche.
Spal in the quarterfinals.
That's his prerogative, I guess. Yeah. Yeah, that's, we actually didn't talk about the Coppa Italia. We're in the quarters now against Spal. I mean, they should make the semis. So, you know, I mean, who's to say that the Coppa Italia is not the most important tournament in Italy? But, you know, I think at this point, and it kind of ties back to the conversation that we've been having about, are these guys good? Are they not good? Like, do they fit together? Do they not? I think you have to give Andrea Pirlo at least another year, if not 2 years or something, just because if you fire him again, then we're right back into the same place we were after Mauricio Sarri. And we're right back into the same place of like, who's going to come in? Who's going to take this team and actually, you know, make them play up to their abilities and whatnot? And then you're going to have, again, another team that was built for another manager. Another manager is going to come in and have to kind of make the best of it. And we're going to be sitting right here in a year's time saying, well, he just doesn't have the guys to make his system work and whatnot. And I think at this point, they can't do that again. They're going to have to ride it out with Pirlo. Obviously, we've talked about whether he was their first choice or not, or whether they did it for the money or whatever. At this point, I think you have to commit to Pirlo for at least a couple seasons more, and actually like let him develop, let him have the time he needs to implement the system. And if it doesn't work out, if just you see that it's not working out after a couple of years, then you move on, then you actually do the tear down that this team actually kind of probably needs at this point. But I think unless you're willing to move in a way and in such a way in which you just tear it all down and just decide that you're not going to win anything or just not going to compete for anything, which they won't because they still have Cristiano Ronaldo, I think, for another season or two. So I think you do have to ride it out with Pirlo one season more. So I think you definitely have to ride it out with Pirlo. Obviously, they might not do it, but you know, in my opinion, I think you have to, because if not, you're just going to be in this continuing treadmill of managers, which then giving them no time to actually see if they pan out or not. You know, a lot of the success that we were talking about with Inter is that Conte, this is his second year, and he's finally kind of doing, like Danny said, like some sort of MVP light type of system and everything. You have to give these guys continuity. If not, it's just not going to work.
And funny enough, yet still, they might still not win anything. Those frauds. But anyway, I shouldn't say that.
That brings up another point. If they don't win anything but finish ahead of Juventus, Sergio, are they still frauds?
Yes, they're still frauds.
That pause was very good.
That pause they're will not be
they're frauds until they win a trophy, any trophy. You know, for them, the Supercopa would actually be a major trophy at this point. I made the math. It's been almost 10 years since they've won anything, like anything at all. So yes, like unless they win something, they're still frauds. Good game, though. Good game. They played great on Sunday. Good game. Props to them.
Yeah, GGWP, as we would say in the gaming world. But to answer your question, or to answer the Twitter question, Danny, I think a big indication of, or big hint of if management is going to stick with Pirlo or not for the rest of the season actually comes back to something I was saying earlier about Pirlo's going forward. What is Pirlo going to do in terms of playing style? Go towards pragmatism or stick to his, you know, high intensity, high line, possession based football? So I think if he continues to stick with his style of play, I think it's a pretty good sign that management wants to just stick with him, frankly. But I think if he switches to like pragmatic style of play, I think that will indicate that he just wants to get results. And I think that would probably indicate that management is, you know, had a word with him and said, okay, look, we need at least Coppa Italia or Scudetto or whatever the minimum threshold is. So who knows? I mean, but something that Sergio said that I thought was very astute, which was that, you know, if we fire him after one season or even after two seasons, we're back at square one. You know, I mean, we're back at, indeed, as you said, a team that isn't built for the next manager. And then, you know, we'll be talking about, okay, we just need to give him a season. It's another rebuilding year. It's like how Milan was in, like, I don't know, 5 years of rebuilding years, you know, five repeats, like a Groundhog Day of rebuilding years, you know? So that, I mean, that's, I don't know. We clearly don't want that. Time is money. So I agree that that would be kind of an issue. But the last thing I will say is that I think another kind of crucial inflection point for Juventus, for the club now, is just the future of the style of play / identity we want to have as a club. Because I think during the Allegri era, we basically had just this very kind of an Atletico de Madrid style of play, which is, you know, sit back, soak up pressure, and, you know, hit him with a goal or two here and there, scrappy goal here and there, and keep that clean sheet. That, I feel like that was really just the identity. That was Juventus. And now it seems to me that we want to almost move towards this modern style of play, you know, this, like, yeah, which people keep saying that, you know, modern style of play. I don't know. I always find it kind of an odd way to characterize it. What's an old style of play? I mean, really, I really don't know. But that's the question for another podcast one day. But yeah, I don't know. Does Juventus want to move into the future and have that, you know, style of play, that, you know, very sexy attacking style of play? If we do, then maybe Pirlo continuing to play the way he wants to play, maybe that's in our long-term benefit. But I don't know. I think it just depends on what do we want in a long-term. Do we want to move forward into that or go back to kind of Allegri style of play.
And I think also it's really telling Milan are doing this after not dumping Stefano Pioli the way everyone was expecting them to at the end of the year. And they probably still would have if he hadn't gone flying out of the restart last year and Ralph Ragnick got snooty about it and was like, well, I'm not going to be the savior hero, so I'm not going to go to Milan. And so they kept him on, and now that he's doing this.
Yeah, no, that's the wild thing about it, is that Pioli was just looked at as the stopgap guy, not the guy to build into the future.
And what you were saying, Chucks, about Milan, I mean, when I was covering Milan, when I wrote for Bleacher Report, that was the thing. Like, you know, I know a lot of Milan fans who remember, you know, when they sacked Seedorf out of nowhere and put Pippo Inzaghi in, and then Inzaghi only last 1 year, and then it was Mihailovic, and Mihailovic, you know, was sacked after a year. That just, it's just too much. You can't grow something. And this is we're in a phase right now where we have to grow the team again. And you're not going to do that unless something like the only place where I would be really okay with it is if, you know, we ended the season really poorly and somebody like Didier Deschamps did end up like an option coming out of the Euros. Like, maybe I'd be okay with it then. But other than that, I agree totally with Sergio in that I think we've just got to stick with this and make it a real project instead of wanting what we said the same thing about Sadi before he was fired about how we needed to how there needed to be an actual project instead of just throwing stuff at the wall and seeing if it stuck.
We'll wrap things up on this Twitter question from @MaxJuventinos. Because of Pirlo's inexperience and the team's transition year this season, we need to be patient and more tolerable. I asked, where do we draw the line though? Was the inner game the bottom, or do we add this expected F-ups and move on?
Can I take that one first, actually? Because it's funny, I wanted to make this comment on the last question, but I thought, I know I didn't get my thoughts together quick enough to quite answer that.
It's okay. It's been one of the kind of those weekends, Chucks, where who the hell can really expect thoughts to be completely thrown together into something cohesive?
Yeah. I always want to make sure I have like a coherent thought before I say something. Because my mother always said, think before you speak.
In that sense, thank you, Mother Chucks.
Oh, yes, she's, I think she's proud. I don't know. That's another question for another day. This week in family issues. No, she's fine. I think it's a really good question because it makes me think of one of the very first concepts I learned in economics, which is something called the sunk cost fallacy, which is basically, you know, oh, I've put in so much time into this. Well, I have to keep going with it because I've, you know, stuck with it for so long. Or, oh, I've spent so much money on this. Well, I have to do this or that now that I've done that. And, you know, likewise with Pirlo, it's like, okay, give him a chance. Obviously, give him the entire season and, you know, give him a good shot. But at what point does it become we're giving him a chance only because, well, we've stuck with him for, I don't know, a season now, so we got to keep going. Or like, well, we put so much into this project now, so we got to keep going with it. The best way to describe the sunk cost fallacy, which I always liked this very simple way of it, is throwing good money after bad money. So, you know, at what point does it become throwing good money after bad money? And I mean, I don't think we're at that point yet, but definitely at least a season to get Pirlo. But yeah, after the season and a half, two seasons, at what point does it become throwing good money after bad money?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's that's definitely a reality. I just don't think unless there is a really extreme case, like the idea that Sadi had, you know, lost the locker room, which really seems to be the case. I don't think that sort of thing comes into play in any sports until a coach has had multiple seasons to try. It certainly isn't a question of, of now, and probably isn't. And, you know, maybe at this time next year, you can start thinking if that comes into of that coming into play, if it's not, if things have, if, you know, the right players haven't come in and things really haven't improved to a point where you can say this does have true potential going forward. But right now, I don't think that you can really bring that into that into play yet.
Yeah, I think, honestly, unless something really catastrophic happens, I wish, I hope that this is as bad as it gets with Pirlo, and in the sense that, you know, they're not really going to compete for the league. You know, we'll see how they do in the Cup. I will see how they do in the Champions League. But I would hope that this is as bad as it's going to get, you know. You would hope that. But I do think that if it's another year of not challenging for anything, I do think at that point you can safely move on. But at this point, I wouldn't even start to think about removing him. I think unless, I mean, and I'm not even sure then, but unless they fail to qualify for Champions League next year, then that becomes a thing in and of itself, right? But unless that happens, I would just, you know, accept this as a rebuilding year and just move on, I would say.
It's also, I think that we're going to see a lot. We're going to see a lot in the next couple of weeks in terms of what does Pirlo learn from this? This is one of the first really true learning experiences that Pirlo is going to have as a coach. And it's going to say a lot when we look at what he's, you know, how he's going to follow this up.
Hopefully it's followed up by something that is nothing close to what we saw this past weekend. So as I said, 95% of our Twitter questions were about Juventus's midfield. We obviously spent a whole lot of time on Juventus's midfield. So thank you all for your Twitter questions, whether they were about Juventus's midfield or not. And now I will try not to say Juventus's midfield for the rest of this episode. So as always, you can send your Twitter questions into @JuventusNation on Twitter. You can follow us on there and on Facebook @BlackandWhiteAndRed all over. You can listen to us on iTunes and Apple Podcasts. Search Black and White and Red all over on Spotify, and on Google Podcasts, search Black and White and Red all over on those two places as well. As always, you can check us out, blackandwhiteandredallover.com. You can join the, as Chuck said, join the conversation in the comment section, because obviously it's very positive these days. So for the aforementioned Chucks, for Sam and for Sergio, this is Danny saying thank you very much for listening. Stay safe out there, and we'll talk to you guys next week.